Welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. My name is Trevor Boehm and I will be your host. Every week or so, I try to get myself a fascinating human on the mic for you, someone who looks at the civilized world just like you do and says no thank you. Someone who wants to break some rules, to lead, and to bring their unique vision into the world. Someone for whom the status quo simply will not do. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I do. Please dive in. Hey folks, welcome back to the Uncivilized Podcast. This is Trevor Boehm, your host. Today I have another referral episode. This is a man named Tom Gaines, and Tom was referred to me by Angus Fletcher. If you haven't listened to Angus's episode, please go back and do so. When I first reached out to Angus in honesty, he said, "Are you sure you want to interview me and not my friend Tom Gaines?" Tom Gaines is in the special forces community. He's been in the military. He's been leading men. He knows men. He's a really, really interesting human being. And I went, "Well, I'd love to interview Tom. Would you please connect us after I interview you?" And so today I get to sit down with Tom. This is a man who spent his life in the military, a man who spent his life in service, a man who spent his life around men, around hard men, around intelligent men, around driven men, around type A men. This is a man who's got all kinds of knowledge about men in tough situations and tough situations. So Tom and I get to sit down and break down, what do men need? What do men in the military need? What do men who are first responders need? How do we thrive? How do we do well in the world, and what do we need to do well in the world? So guys, especially, take some note on this one. Listen to the man and how he talks about service. I think that was my biggest takeaway from this episode, was this is a guy who's here to serve. This is also a guy who kicks some major ass. So I love how Tom intertwines the two and interweaves the two. So if you want to have some interesting stories about a man who's done it, who's been there, who's kicked ass, and who is also an incredible teacher, sit down for this episode and take some notes. Without further ado, I present to you Tom Gaines. Tom Gaines, welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. As we were just chatting beforehand, you are an interesting recommendation from a previous guest named Angus Fletcher, who gave me virtually zero information on you, just said, "This is the man you want to talk to, more so than you want to talk to me." So welcome to the podcast. For people who may not know who you are or what you do in the world, would you mind giving us your 1 minute American elevator pitch?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I wouldn't be offended if people don't know me, because I basically have no outside presence, right? So I am an Army officer. I've been in for about 17 years. Just pinned Lieutenant Colonel recently.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I kind of grew up, my dad started out in the military, but then, got out when I was in elementary school. From Tennessee, grew up in the South, went to the University of Tennessee with a undergraduate degree in history. Just because I kind of like figuring out where we came from, and that kind of helped me figure out why things were the way they are. I commissioned into the Army through ROTC into the infantry in 2005. So right as like the height of the surge in Iraq, I was a rifle platoon leader in Iraq for 15 months for that. Came back. Did a train up again and deployed again with a different infantry battalion, this time as a battalion plans officer and communications officer. Did another year rotation there, and got to witness kind of the change in the environment between my deployments, which was pretty stark. Came back, did a little bit of schooling, and then got to spend 3 years in Naples, Italy, as a part of the NATO Allied Forces Command south there, which was phenomenal, getting exposed to the different partner nations and how different militaries and different cultures think was great. And just the opportunity to live abroad in Italy was also pretty fantastic. Although frustrating at times, It was just based on the culture clash between Americans and Italians. Mm-hmm. Came back from Italy in 2014 and transitioned into special operations. So I've been in a variety of roles in the special operations community since 2014. Really just looking at ways that I can help people solve problems, right? Mm-hmm. So I've come at it in a variety of different roles, but that really what it comes down to for someone in my position is helping people understand what's going on and helping people find solutions to whatever is going on in their life. So that's a quick down and dirty about my professional life. I'm married. I've been married for about 3 years. My wife is also active duty military. She's a nurse.
Okay.
We met through the Army, and she's actually currently deployed to Baghdad. So she gets back in about 6 weeks. So, you know, not that we're counting the days or anything, but it's going to be great to have her back.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service to both of you. This conversation could go a million different ways. I would love first, before we dive into more personal military ideas or working with men or some of the things that you've seen militarily, you said something that made a flag pop up in my head. And that was, I saw the change in environment between deployments, and that was pretty stark. Would you mind just sharing a little bit about what you mean about the change of environment?
Yeah, sure. So when I first went into Iraq in 2005, the situation was really volatile, and then it just started to degrade from there, right? Like the insurgency was well-funded, and they were out and they were actively doing things, right? So there was a long stretch in time where every single day we knew when we were going on patrols that we were going to take contact of some kind, mm-hmm. right? Whether or not it was an IED or just a few pop shots here and there, or, you know, get into a prolonged gun battle like that. That was pretty much known anytime the wire. Transition just a couple years later, things had calmed down significantly, right? So the place where we were, our second tour, used to be a significant hotbed, but you know, it just was not the case anymore. So the government of Iraq started to be able to protect its own populace in partnership with the U.S. forces that were on the ground, and we were starting to make headway. And it was kind of interesting because you would, on patrol, walking around places, you'd see piles of spent ammunition, and you knew that a firefight happened there at some point in the past, but it was calm then, right? So we could count, you wouldn't really need all of your digits to count the number of true engagements that we ended up having over that second tour, just because the security was so much different, and things had transitioned so drastically. So that was pretty interesting to get to see that and see that, you know, things weren't perfect, but they were definitely getting better.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Tom, how do you as a man and you as a human, like, what are the mental, emotional preparations you would have to make to leave the wire and knowing, like, okay, we're going to make contact. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what it's going to feel like. What do you and I don't want to say as a soldier, because it feels like that's perhaps a different archetype, but what do you as a human have to deal with, say to yourself, come to terms with every time you step over that line?
So I think there's two bins. So the first bin is as a human, right? So me personally, knowing that I could be going out and could be going into a potentially hazardous situation. And I think really what it comes down to is a sense of duty, right? Like I signed up to do this. Mm-hmm. I have a job to go out and do, and I'm going to do that job to the best of my ability. I accept that it is hazardous. Mm. I am choosing to put myself in this position because there are other people who aren't capable of doing it, right? So either, you know, the people back in the States to trying to protect them from any outside influences who are trying to go in and harm them. But more directly, like the people of Iraq who are being bullied, threatened, and killed by these insurgent groups who are trying to impose their ideology and their way of life on somebody else, right? So it goes down to back to the kind of the motto that I hate bullies.
Okay.
And I feel like if you can do something about it and you're willing to do something about it, you should. So I think that kind of played to my sense of duty and being like, this is the reason why I think it's worth the risk personally to go outside the wire. So that's the first bin. The second bin is I was a leader, right? So I was the platoon leader to a small team of about 36 people. And I was responsible for these soldiers, right? So the American people had in place trust and confidence that I would shepherd them to the best of my ability, right? That I would take care of them and that I would not place them in harm's way if there was any way around it. So part of that duty was as a leader, making sure that my soldiers and my unit was taken care of. Okay. So that almost made it easier for me because it's not so much about me, Tom, it's about the organization and my role within it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. I imagine though, there's still some squaring up that you have to do emotionally because the lives of 36 people is a big deal. You know, if I have a bad day podcasting, my Zoom goes out and I'm like, ah, today was terrible. But if you have a bad day on the other side of the wire, people get hurt, people die, people like lives, entire lives get shifted drastically. Was that a conscious thought that you go through, or is it way in the back and it's therefore there's protocol for you to follow and there's something to keep you running on autopilot? Or how do you square that up?
So when you're getting ready to go out, it doesn't necessarily factor in. You simply put it in the back of your mind. But I think that's one of the things that like professional soldiers do have to wrestle with, and especially if they're in leadership roles, you have to wrestle with the fact that your decisions have life and death consequences. And I think, you know, one of the things that the U.S. military presses hard on is the idea of a professional ethic. So there's a lot of time invested in understanding and developing a professional ethic that's based on values. And hey, these are the values that we hold dear as an organization. And if you're going to be a member of this organization and a leader within this organization, they need to be a part of your values as well. So what that does is it goes back to the why, right? So I understand like everything that I do are based on these values. So it's easier for me to complete the mission because I know what's going on behind it. Now, that's not saying that when something does go wrong, that it doesn't take a toll. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime something would happen and one of my soldiers was injured, that was a significant emotional event. And in the moment and immediate aftermath, you know, the easiest thing to do is just kind of repress it and move on so you can complete the mission.
Sure.
But long term, you know, coming to terms with the fact that happened, it took a pretty significant amount of time. You know, just both the guys within my organization and then writ large. So now I call him my Army twin. So he and I went to school together, went to ROTC together, graduated at the same time, went to the same infantry officer basic course, and we're in the same platoon together. Graduated that, went to Ranger School at the same time. Now, I went to Fort Lewis to a unit and took a rifle platoon. He went to Hawaii and took a platoon. We ended up deploying to Iraq within a couple of months of each other, right? So we were, up to that point on paper, we were basically identical. You know, one of my worst days in Iraq, I was moving down, you know, trying to secure a particular area, and somebody set off an IED right under my truck. Fortunately, I wasn't hurt very badly. You know, we were able to continue moving. He was on a dismounted patrol, and somebody set off an IED underneath him, and it killed him. Right, so that took a long time for me to come to terms with. Right, so for our entire military career, we were identical, but you know, by some stroke of luck, the paperwork sent him to a platoon in Hawaii and me to a platoon in Fort Lewis. I came home, he did not. And that was super hard for me to deal with.
Is it something, if you're open to just sort of diving into this, I just had this image of some completely irrelevant human being like, Tom left, buddy right, you know, like, where do you want Tom to go? It's just like, almost could have flipped a coin and could have swapped those two scenarios, where it wasn't like this well thought out thing of like, you know, Tom's a perfect guy for Fort Lewis, his friend's perfect for Hawaii, let's do that. It was almost innocuous. How do you reconcile, or how do you grapple with the unknown in that situation, or the chaos of, let's call it the chaos of decision that's completely out of your control, but is completely deciding your fate? Does that question make sense?
It does. So I think the key there is that it's completely outside of my control. And I didn't necessarily know too much at the time. But you know, thinking back on it now, having studied a little bit more and thought more about it, you know, some of the tenets of Stoic philosophy help a lot with that, right? So, hey, there's no reason to worry about the things you can't control, because it's not going to change the outcome anyway. So learning to let go of those things was pretty freeing for me. So, you know, when it first happened, I kind of felt this added pressure to live my life a little bit more fully. Because he can't. Right. So, hey, I owe it to him to not take the fact that I won what is essentially the flip of a coin for granted, but to live my life with purpose and, you know, to the full extent that I can, because I can. So I think that's really the way that I've come to terms with it. Like, it's the decision. There was no nefarious intent. It was simply fate that decided it, and it's outside of my control. So I'll control the things that I can and let go and accept the things that I can't.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that sentence right there is that's a spiritual path in itself, of like, that's a lifelong study and a lifelong relationship with just that sentence. And I appreciate the direction you went with it. One of the things we're working with this month in the nation, my group, is the idea that, you know, some of your deepest gems come in the garden of your wounds, is what we say, and that there are these things that happen to you, and you get to make the decision. It's something that I tried to reiterate the other night on a call, that you're allowed to take it and run with it. You're allowed to say, "Hey, my buddy's not here, but I am. I'm gonna try to hit as many home runs as I can." And then I shared a story with the guys of a friend of mine who, when he was younger, his father was murdered. And I asked him, this was a couple of years ago. I was like, what are you going to do with the fact that you're here and you're alive and your mom, you have a great relationship? And it was more of kind of feeding him the question of like, are you going to try to write a New York Times bestseller? Are you going to try to get on Oprah? And he just said, I'm just going to live a good life. And I felt, I was like, oh, you know what? That's okay too. It's, you don't have to wake up and shit lightning because something happened to you. You're allowed to say, I'm going to be kind. I'm going to be compassionate. So I appreciate that. Tom, would you mind if we take a half step back and you spoke about values and the values that the military has and the values that you have? Would you mind just speaking to the power of values for the men who are listening to this call?
Yeah. I think values are so important. I think it's important for people to actually sit down and have that discussion with yourself about what it is that you really value, right? So like I said, the Army has its own values, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they of course had to turn it into an acronym so everybody can remember it. And you know, that's just what the Army does. And I agree with them, but those are the Army's values. Those aren't my values. Mm-hmm. So, you know, investing that time in yourself to have that conversation with yourself and being honest, like, hey, these are the things that I value more than anything else, right? So I value the sanctity of human life and the ability for people to be in control of their own lives and be able to make informed decisions about how they want to live their lives, right? I think that's one of my bedrock foundations because I just find that to be so critical, right? I value intelligent discourse, right? I don't value arguments, but I value when people can have disparate viewpoints and actually engage in dialogue, right? I value that because we can learn and we can advance, right? So anything that I can do to advance humanity as a species, like I think that's particularly valuable, right? I don't have kids. I've never really felt that strong urge. I've got 10 nieces and nephews, so I live vicariously through them. I just borrow them from time to time.
And then
we
give
do
them
cool
back.
Things, yeah. and then I give them back. Exactly. So instead of me worrying about my kids, I think that if I had kids, I would be more narrowly focused on setting the conditions for their future. But because I don't have kids, it's kind of allowed me to take a little bit broader perspective and say, hey, I just want my community to be more successful. I want America to be more successful. I want the world to be more successful in whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of been a little bit freeing. You know, obviously there's trade-offs, but I think that's having had that discussion and what are my values and then aligning what I'm doing against them has been super important, right? And there's been times where I've just felt a little off and I'm not sure why I felt off. And then when I stop and reflect, I find that, you know, there's some part of my life or something that's going on that is in conflict with one of my values or beliefs. So, you know, taking that time to check my course against that compass is incredibly powerful, right? And once I figure out what that is and change my behavior or update my values, hey, maybe I needed to refine them a little bit based on changing conditions. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of deep-seated unrest or angst tends to go away because everything is once again in balance.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Hope you're loving this episode with Tom. I certainly did. Again, guys, my Kill the Nice Guy course is absolutely blowing up. If you find yourself afraid of conflict and looking for more confidence, I'm tired of being stuck in the friend zone of life, please check out manuncivilized.com/kill the nice guy. And if you're listening to this and you haven't read my book yet, Man Uncivilized, either go to my website or go to Amazon or go to Audible or go to Kindle or go to literally anywhere where halfway decent books are sold and get your hands on Man Uncivilized. All right, back to the episode. Here's Tom.
I have kind of a perhaps a sticky question for you because you said the Army has its values and you have yours. I'm curious what your recommendation would be or how you've ever had to navigate where your personal values perhaps are in conflict with the organization that you work with their values. And you don't have to go into specifics, but if that has happened, how have you navigated that?
So fortunately, the values of the Army and my personal values pretty much align, right? Like I don't think that I could have continued this long in an organization where like I didn't agree with them. So it's not just, I'm going to do it because I'm supposed to, but I do agree with what they are. I think the part that I struggle with is the fact that like we're in the business of death, unfortunately, right? Like that's a hard thing to wrestle with. So especially since one of my core beliefs is in the sanctity of human life and that human life should be protected. So that mixed with the other end, which is, hey, sometimes nations go to war and death is a part of that. So I think what I've figured out is where my place in the world is within that, right? So within the officer corps, the whole point of the officer corps is to manage that, to manage the sort of the destruction that modern war is, to minimize any extraneous death or destruction. And, you know, the Army isn't perfect, but people pay a lot of attention and try to get it right as much as possible. So that's the first thing, doing as much as we can. The second thing is I have found my way to within the Army where like that's not the primary focus of like what I'm doing day to day. I'm working on things that prevent that, right? Mm-hmm. So not only am I in alignment with the Army values, I'm in alignment with my own values in a way that's complementary to getting after what the organization is trying to achieve.
Cool. Thank you for that. Tom, you said something else that was interesting to me of there was you coming into the special forces community kind of down the road in your career, as opposed to I was 18, I wanted to kick ass, so I joined the special forces. Would you mind sharing a bit about the decision factor or the decision process to say like, oh, wow, I'm married or I'm in a relationship and I'm into my career. I'm not, you know, just brimming with testosterone at 20. What was the decision factor that led you into the special forces?
Honestly, it's the same decision factor that got me into the Army in the first place. And that is, the old proverb, to whom much has been given, much is demanded, right? So I've always kind of felt like if I am able physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and I'm willing, I should raise my hand and volunteer, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the reason that I joined the military to begin with. Hey, there's this thing going on, you know, I'm an able-bodied male. I think that I can contribute, send me, and that's the same thing with, when I got into special operations that pushed me there is, you know, they're always recruiting. And I was willing and able. So I raised my hand and say, I'm willing. I don't know if I'm what you are looking for. But if I am, you know, here I am, you know, let me help.
Okay.
So that's really what it's come down to is I end up just volunteering a whole bunch without necessarily knowing, but it's like, well, this, it's kind of like, hey, I know there's problems,
right?
I want to help however I can. Mm-hmm. If I can be of value, you know, I would love to help. Yeah. And that's served me pretty well throughout my life. Yeah. You know, it's given me some pretty interesting opportunities and given me a lot of just personal satisfaction of getting to help, mm-hmm. of getting to work on hard problems, mm-hmm. and starting to see results, that are not necessarily everybody knows about or visible, but still have impact.
Yeah. I appreciate that answer a lot. I think it speaks to something I'd love to ask you personally about, and then kind of extend the next section of our conversation to men in general. And to speak to you personally, it feels like there's a sense of service and that you want to be of service. You want to be, I have a teacher named Kobe Kozlowski, a wonderful woman, who said her deal with God, and however you define that word, is please use me well. Like, she's like, I want to get to the end of my life and be like, I was well used, and that in the most upstanding way of saying that sentence. Was that sense of service instilled in you by your parents, by the church, by community? Or is it, do you think, something that was just naturally innate within you?
I think there's probably elements of both nature and nurture in that. I think growing up, my parents raised me in the church, and you know, there's a lot of selfless service in that ideology. You know, I went into the Boy Scouts as a young kid, and there's a lot of that same sort of community service that's pushed in the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. So I think that refined what was already there, which is sort of this sense that there's more to life than just me. Mm. You know, I'm not just an individual. I am a member of a greater community. And, you know, it's not me versus the world. It's us working together versus just the human condition and the universe. Yeah. So I think my natural bent towards like playing cooperative games versus playing individual games was just enhanced by my upbringing.
Okay. Before we actually dive into men at large, Tom, I would love to ask you two questions, and they are,
yeah.
What was one of the unintended positives, like something you never thought was going to happen or come about from being a member of Special Forces? And then what was an unexpected challenge, something that you're like, wow, totally didn't see that coming, if there was one of each?
So I think the unexpected positive was the relationships and networks I've been able to form as a result of it, right? So the caliber of people that you find yourself around in special operations, when they don't let everybody in, right? You have to be assessed and selected to join the team. Mm-hmm. So it tends to be people who are a little bit more driven, a little bit more motivated, who want to show up and want to do great things. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's been phenomenal, because I basically learn from everybody I meet. So not only has it afforded me opportunities to, you know, advance my education, my personal growth through, you know, additional opportunities, but just the people that I'm around every day, just push me to want to be better, because, you know, everybody around me is performing at a high level. So I don't want to let my team down, and I don't want to just show up and phone it in, you know, while everybody else is performing. It's not like it's a high stakes thing where people are demanding, you know, show up to work, give 110%, row harder, row faster. It's just being around that community. Everybody rises to the challenge. Okay. So I think that's been the most positive thing. I think it's not necessarily a negative thing, but I think the most frustrating part is how difficult it can be to operate within very large organizations, right? So specifically, like, the U.S. government is not known for being small or nimble, right? So when you're trying to do things, it often takes way longer to do, sure. Which is super frustrating when you're like, man, I know what needs to be done. I can do it. Mm-hmm. I just need you to say yes.
Yeah.
You know, and from my piece of the pie, like, it's so clear. The problem is I only see one small piece.
Sure.
There's so much more that's going on outside that I'm not privy to, I'm not working on. Mm. And frankly, if I was, it would detract me from what I'm doing. So there's reasons why it takes long, and there's systems and processes,
yeah,
and that friction exists. I understand that, but it's frustrating when, like, you just want to get after, want to solve problems, but you just can't because the wheels move so slowly.
Yeah. I can feel it, like, coming through the Zoom screen of like, but I can do this, but you guys don't get it. Like, I can do this right now. Okay. Yeah. So beautiful. I appreciate that. Tom, let's talk about men for a minute, if we can. I call myself a men's expert because I work with men every single day in a really unique fashion. I would propose that you are very similar. You may not just have had that hat on. So I imagine the vast majority of your coworkers and teammates and whatnot throughout your career, not to say that there aren't amazing women in the military, but have been a lot of men. Would you, if you could just take a moment and speak to some of the challenges you see men facing, and it doesn't have to be in the military or coming out of the military, but just, I feel like you have such a unique vantage point that, yes, you're working with really driven people, you're working with type A people, you're working with unique people, but you're also working with people in very unique environments and under unique stresses. What do you see if I had to say, okay, I'm about to ask you, what's going on with men in a challenge standpoint, and what can they do to perhaps navigate that challenge? What would your answer be?
So I think that one of the greatest challenges, that men faced, are currently facing, and I think this is a little bit brought on by, like, the title of what you're doing, right? Uncivilized. Is this sense of civilization. And I think for me, what it kind of feels like is just overlaying your life on top of the world around you and the environment, right? So we're basically just whitewashing everything, just overlaying the systems and processes that we have agreed on as civilization on top of the ecology, right? So basically, like, we're taking all of the terrain that exists, and we're basically just paving it over and saying, this is a blank slate, and we're just gonna live here. And I feel like that makes living easier, right? Because we're basically just able to take away all of the challenges, or a lot of the challenges, but it also makes people very brittle because we aren't giving people the opportunity to learn how to deal with adversity in small, safe to fail experiments. We're not giving them various terrains and different stresses and getting involved in environments and actually going in and looking around at what's actually going on underneath. And I think that sets conditions for people to be frustrated more easily because they aren't given the tools to actually figure out how to learn how to deal with the sorts of volatility and uncertainty that you just can't whitewash away. Right. By just adding in some civilization. We're not that far removed from living in the woods.
Right.
But we like to pretend we are. Mm. So I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges we face is we've lost that connectivity because it's super easy to just pave over and live on top of it as opposed to actually engaging with the environment.
Yeah, I agree. There's no app that's going to remove the human experience. It's like, oh, cool. I just downloaded. I'll never have a problem again. Everything's going to be sweet. Everything's going to be amazing. And I'm sure we both know people who financially are at a very low point, all the way up to people who make more money in a day than you and I will make in a year. And what do you know? They both still have problems. They both still have challenges. They both still get divorced. They both still get sick. They both still have to deal with their past and their inner life. So I really appreciate that answer. Tom, one of the things I try to set a frame for with our men is that we're trying to mix, or we are mixing, both the primal and the divine. And whatever those words mean to the individual man is fine with me. I'm not pushing a dogma. It feels like that's something you've done quite well, because you did mention that you were brought up in the church, yet I imagine special operations is pretty damn primal. Right, it's not a lot of sitting around and meditating to try to win things, but yet how have you not navigated but integrated those two parts of your life, specifically as a man, the primal and the connection to something bigger than yourself?
I think it comes down to I don't necessarily distinguish between the two. I think it comes down to those are kind of two in the same, right? So yes, there is, can be very primal, but you can't go into it and operate in that space at the highest levels without also understanding like spirituality and the larger purpose for it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to just go in and execute indiscriminate violence, mm-hmm. right? Like that is not hard, mm-hmm. right? That just takes some willpower. Mm-hmm. But going in and understanding the application of violence to achieve greater means has to have some sort of spiritual component to it, right? So it's similar to our earlier discussion on values, where it's not just about the primal violence, but it's about the means that tool helps you achieve that you can't get to other ways. And understanding and being in a place where spiritually or emotionally you understand that and are at peace with what you are doing. Mm. So I think that's why they're like so intertwined for me.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. Can you take a moment and speak to, we get a lot of first responders, prior military, active military that listen to this podcast. And it's one of the groups that I've worked with in a workshop type capacity. And I don't want to say this in a derogatory or negative way, but a lot of those men come out with challenges. And they come out with challenges facing emotionality and expressing some of the things that they've lived through and they've seen and they're battling with. Would you mind speaking to anybody in that community that is listening on some of the ways you found that men reconcile what's going on inside of them when they do come out, and perhaps some, not methods, but advice or inspiration for a guy that is out of the military or is a first responder or an ex-first responder who is struggling?
I think first and foremost is the fact that they're not broken, right? There's this sort of stigma that, hey, first responders, military, went through a traumatic experience, they have PTSD, and they're broken. Like they're basically, we might as well just discard them. Society no longer has use for them. They are not valuable anymore. And that is absolutely not the case, right? It's not something that is unfixable. It's not something that should define people for the rest of their lives, right? There, it's nothing has gotten you so far down the path where you can't heal. Mm-hmm. So I think first and foremost, it's that you are not broken, and you know there's always hope. I think the second thing that is critical is understanding that you are not alone. So by that, I mean a couple of things. I think the first thing is that you aren't the first person to have experienced exactly what you're going through. It's very easy to feel isolated by these things, right? For a couple of reasons. One, because there's a lot of shame around it. There's a lot of shame when either actions that you've done that you don't necessarily sit right because maybe they violated your morals, right? Maybe you had to do something that was right, was righteous, and was justified, but still is you know, hard. That's not the first time that has happened. So you aren't alone in having gone through that, right? You aren't the first person who has come back and had to wrestle with things. You aren't the first person that, you know, you have survived and somebody else did not. It's isolating.
Yeah.
Because there's that shame that goes along with it. So you don't necessarily want to talk about it, but then it's also isolating because there is sort of this sense that like, nobody knows how I feel. Mm. Nobody else has ever felt this way, when that's just not true. That's simply a lie that you end up telling yourself, which is self-defeating. So understanding that you are not alone in feeling the way you are is important. And then the other part of not being alone is that there's so many people that want to help, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the people to your left and right, either physically, like the people who are there with you at that time, because they understand more than anybody else what's going on and what you went through. You know, people with general experience in those things. So, you know, any other military or first responder who went through certain situations can empathize and would love to help. And then there's so many organizations out there with people who have been in situations, or, you know, trained professionals who have studied, and that's their life's calling, is to work with this population and help them find their way back out. So you're surrounded by all of these resources. You just have to reach out and ask. So I think that would be what I would tell those people.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's just a male thing too, where I've worked with so many groups of just civilian men, Tom, and have guys be like, well, I thought everybody would think it's weird that I have an issue with alcohol. And I'm like, you thought you're the dude? You're the only dude? Like you're literally the dude? Like there's tons of dudes, you know? But, and I've gone through challenges myself. I thought like, I remember getting divorced and be like, no one's lived through this before. And having my therapist go, 800,000 people will get divorced this year. And while that didn't actually solve my problem, it was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. I had no idea that I wasn't the only guy. I think that's really, really, really helpful. Tom, if you're open to or allowed to talk about it, what's like upcoming for you that you're excited about or inspired by? Is it staying in the military? Are you gonna be getting out? You have thoughts of like a bigger picture perhaps when you do retire?
Yeah, so I am getting ready to actually change jobs again. So I am headed to Wake Forest University to be the department chair of the ROTC department at Wake Forest. So, you know, that's coming into the Army. There was a couple of things on my bucket list, and teaching ROTC was one of them. So I've always been passionate about teaching. Like I love to teach. I love seeing that light bulb that goes on in somebody else's eyes when like they've learned a new concept or they've learned a new skill. And now like I've basically like unlocked another small part of the world for this individual. That is like, that is so powerful and so meaningful to me. And the army is now going to pay me to go to a university, and I will just get to do that full time with college students who like are really in like the season in their lives for doing that, right? Where now they're coming into adulthood and they're finally able to express individual freedom to find their paths.
Yeah.
And like, I am being given the opportunity to help shape that. Yeah. That is so exciting to me, to be able to influence those people, those students that are coming in. And then, you know, on top of it, those are about to be the next generation of leaders, both in the military, for those who stay in long term. But if not, you know, if a career military isn't for them, I will at least create leaders for the next generation of America, right? Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful. You know, if you want to talk about being able to have an outsized effect on the world around you, like what better way than to help grow the next generation of people who will lead this country wherever we go to. So that like bucket list item about to be checked off. So I'm super excited about that.
Awesome. Good for you. And how fortunate are these kids or young people to get someone with like, you just blew up in your, like just your face lit up, everything about you lit up, and nothing's more contagious or more inspirational than having someone in front of you who's that lit up. So congratulations to you. And I say congratulations to those kids. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your time, sharing your energy. Usually at the end of these calls, I say, so what's your Instagram handle? Where can people find you? What's your website? I'm going to give you that opportunity, but I have a feeling you're going to be like, come see me at Wake Forest. Or do you have a way that you want people to get in touch with you? Or is that something you want to share?
So yeah, I don't have a huge online presence.
Yeah.
I'm just not very, very good at social media. So I would love to have conversations with people.
Sure.
You know, if they want to get into contact with me, you know, I can send you my contact information, sure. And they can reach out to me directly.
Okay. We'll throw it in the show notes. Tom, thanks for coming on, brother. I really appreciate you. As I said, I appreciate this conversation and kind of the leap of faith you took to come onto a men's podcast. So thank you, brother. I'll give Angus a nod for your referral. Have a kick-ass rest of your day. Cheers.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is Trevor Boehm signing off on another episode of the Uncivilized Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please give us a share, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you're interested in getting a hold of my book, Man Uncivilized, whether you're a man or a woman, please go to www.manuncivilized.com/the book and get reading.